This is Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Welcome, everybody. It is Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle. Friday edition of the program is a good one. It's brought to you by, the opening drive anyway, is brought to you by Cherish. Coming up, we got the professor, John Clayton, joining us. We're going to get everybody ready for week one of the XFL. How about that? People are excited.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to
people.
People texting in, people on the Twitter, as you call it, talking. How come you don't talk more Dragons? I'm like, there's nothing's happened yet. Give us a chance here. We got to wait for a game to take place before we can get into a deep, meaningful conversation about the XFL. Nothing's happened yet.
Yeah, I will be taping the game. It's on ESPN, correct?
Yes.
And heard Greg McElroy talking about today. And Clayton, he's the color guy. Former, was he, Alabama quarterback?
Yeah.
Greg McElroy. So he was talking to Clayton about it. He's like, well, what do you expect? And he's like, you know, I really don't know, John.
Yeah, that's part of the intrigue.
He's like the rest of us. We haven't seen a preseason game, or, you know, I know Mora has a chance to go over there and watch practices, but I mean, there's just not a lot that you can get. So we'll see. I am honestly really pulling for, I'm hoping that we get a good brand of football that is something that can, I don't want to say, you know, give the NFL run for its money by any reach, but, you know, at least something that would, you know, help the NFL. I mean, it possibly is like a farm league.
Well, especially for a city like Seattle that doesn't have NHL right now, doesn't have the NBA. This is a dead spot in the schedule, and unfortunately, the closest college basketball team is in a really down year. Cougs are better than the Huskies, but there's not much to really sink your teeth into. You're waiting for a spring training to start for a team that we've all acknowledged, including the front office. It's not going to be a year about winning. It's about developing the youth. So this fills a really interesting gap, and we'll get into that conversation coming up in the next segment. We'll talk some more about what's to come and what'll make it interesting. But Bob Condotta wrote an article about the Seahawks saying they've got a great 1-2 punch as far as receivers go, which is clear, right? Tyler Lockett, DK Metcalf. But do they need a true number three receiver? Because we can go up and down that roster and say, well, you know, this guy was good. Hollister, to me, became the de facto number three because Disley was hurt. You got nothing out of Jerron Brown. You got nothing out of Moore. Ursua didn't get in the game until the end of the season. You didn't have a number three. I mean, your de facto number three was a guy that you brought over, let go, brought him back in Hollister. And I mean, that's not a shot at him, but that's just, he just became that de facto guy. So they don't have a legit number three. I guess the question is, A, do you think there's one on the roster? Is it Ursua that's just waiting to be developed? And do they need a legit number three?
I hate to keep bringing this up, but where do you think Metcalf would have been if Disley was healthy the entire year?
I think his numbers would have been lower.
Yeah, do you think it would have been the number three? Because if Disley's healthy,
probably.
I think you're looking at it in a totally different way.
I know. I still look at the receivers though as being, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Even though the tight end works in there, and do you look at Disley as being the number two guy then if he had been here the whole season? I suppose so, but I don't
bet
really.
DK'd still have more targets. I think they'd still look at his size and his speed, and yeah, I'd say I'm going to say he'd still be number two, but I think the numbers would be lower. I don't think he'd be 900 yards. I think he'd have fewer targets and catches because that you're going to spread that out to Disley.
No, but Dave's right. That might have been a blessing in disguise a little bit, giving Metcalf more of an opportunity.
Yeah. Well, and then you know you could have used Hollister a little bit more differently, and then I think, honestly, you would have been better in the running game. You would have been able to call plays, I think, in a better fashion because, look, he's as good of a blocker. I would say, maybe I'm wrong about this, but he's as good of a blocker as Fant. And they had to put George Fant in there a lot of times. And maybe he's not as good as a blocker, but he also poses the threat of pass. Remember last year when we were talking about George Fant, everybody was talking about how he's going to get like 15, 20 catches.
That's what I thought.
I thought you did.
Yeah, I thought really? 10 or 15.
I don't know why.
Because what they do through, well, because I thought they'd want to come back to him after he got tripped up by the turf.
I think we set the over in the midday. We set the over and under number at like 7, and I took the under.
I was 3.
I just thought they were going to evolve a little bit from the jumbo package, and then just with George Fant with his basketball background, I just thought,
you got nothing. You got nothing out
of him. And if he was playing in the XFL, at least that's what he told me. I asked him on the plane in Carolina, hey, would you get 1 foot in? Would that have been a catch in college or a touchdown? He's like, oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I never really saw the close-up on that. But, yeah, Fant had 1 foot in on one of those passes that Russell threw to him. It was on a scramble, too. It was pretty impressive because, you know, when a scramble occurs, you got to try to find a place to sit down. And George adjusted his route and kind of came back towards Russell. So I thought it was a good job by him. But, no, I mean, I think it would have allowed you to call different plays. And then it would have allowed you to use Hollister maybe in a different way. Maybe he's more of a wideout. And then we've already talked about you throw it to the goal line against San Francisco with Disley, and he probably gets in instead of Hollister, who's a little bit lighter.
So, I mean, they developed options. They had people that became de facto number threes, and maybe it would have been a different mix if Disley's healthy. But back to the original question, do they need it? Do they need to go out and invest either in the draft because – and I'll trust the draft nicks on this. I'm not going to pretend to have scouted all the college wide receivers out there, but they say it's a deep wide receiver draft. So I'll take them at their word. Do they need to spend draft capital? They tried with Jennings. So you're down a receiver. You invested a fourth-round pick in a receiver last year that did not pan out. So you made an investment. You didn't replace it. So you feel like they'd like to at least commit that much to a wide receiver. Do you do that, or do you go the free agent route? Do you go after a guy like Emmanuel Sanders or Robbie Anderson or somebody a little older like Randall Cobb, who I'm not that interested in, but do you think they need to go that route?
Well, I'm looking at these guys from last year, and we've seen 2 years in a row now of David Moore and Jerome Brown not necessarily meeting expectations. We've seen glimpses of these guys being good at times, more so with Moore than with Jerome Brown. They're done with Jerome Brown. His contract is up. I don't think – I mean, he might get some sniffs in free agency, but I don't think the Seahawks are interested in bringing him back. Hopefully they're not anyway. David Moore I still like, and then you have Malik Turner, too, as a possible number three. I think he was the third guy toward the end of the season,
honestly,
and then he had
Jim,
concussions.
Do these guys say they're number three, their ability?
Well, I like Turner probably equally with Moore, or maybe a little more than Moore, probably because of that one game that he had against San Francisco. Remember when he came in overtime and how he was really good along the right sideline there? So I think there's some potential there, but
I think they're just guys.
I'm thinking Bob only remembers the drop in Green Bay.
Yeah, I think they're just guys. I think they have the ability to catch a ball. They can do it here and there, but they're just guys. I think they're a dime a dozen. And I know that sounds really disrespectful, but if we're being honest about the level of talent at that position, you've got two top-tier guys, clearly, and then just a bunch of guys. And I think in Ursula, we just don't know. That he hasn't been given the opportunity yet. He may shine. He may step up to the front. But Josh Gordon could have been that guy. He could have been that number three. We saw even in the few catches he had, he looks different. It looked different the way he caught the ball.
Most amazing catch I've ever seen in person.
Yeah, and I mean, look at that tiny sample set. And you have the trained eye, Dave. You play this game, and you just see the difference between what it looks like when he's out there running around and catching a ball and a hard-to-catch ball versus a Malik Turner versus a David Moore, who can do things here and there, but they're just not guys I want to rely upon. I think they can improve that spot.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. You mentioned David Moore, and I was talking about we were talking about Nico Thorpe yesterday.
Yes.
And I just didn't see him at any point developing into, I don't want to say Richard Sherman, but Shaquille Griffin. Use him as that example. Kind of that way with David Moore. I mean, I think that, you know, he's one of those guys that can contribute every once in a while, but he's just not ever going to, you know, ever going to break through and be this incredible, you know, superstar guy like, you know, and I would say, you know, Jermaine Kearse. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of people, I loved Jermaine Kearse. He had some of the most clutch catches, and I know Russell trusted him, and some of the things that he did, he was money. And I know people are going to text in, oh, he was terrible, this, that. I'm sorry. I love Jermaine Kearse. But I just don't see David Moore being that guy. The guy I think it's going to be, I think it's going to be Ursua.
I hope it is.
Yeah, I think he's going to be the guy that I think he's he looks like Doug Baldwin, the way he runs. Now, nobody's like Doug, but just the way he runs his routes and how he gets open. And I think I would bet that there was a little bit of a battle going on behind the scenes of getting him on the field. And again, we talked about this last year. It was very just from my perspective, it was very un-Pete-like that we didn't see Ugo Amadi that much out there. We didn't see Blair. And LJ Collier, I mean, they probably could have gotten him some more reps. And then Ursua, it took till what, the last game of the year that he got active? Yep. Was that the first time he caught a pass?
Yep. He makes his first catch, and then Pete Carroll afterwards, it was like, yeah.
A little critical.
Should have gone, should have been in the end zone. I'm thinking, well, he got the first down, Pete. Didn't he? I mean,
yeah, he did.
He crossed the yellow line on my screen anyway. And so, yeah, he didn't quite make it to the goal line, but I'm thinking, man, tough crowd.
Pete was tough on the young guys this year. He was a little less willing to hand out the bouquets that he's done in the past, and that's fine. It just, and he may be that guy. He's to be determined. So I kind of exclude him from the group of Malik Turner and David Moore and Jerron Brown and those. I don't really put him in that group.
That'd be a big jump for Ursua, though. And I liked what you saw from him in August and his potential. And you see his numbers at Hawaii. He was, had so many touchdowns over there.
Well, why would that be a big jump?
He was coached by Nick Rolovich, too, which I think is a huge factor.
Yeah, a huge factor in him not playing. That's good. Why would that be a big jump?
Because he didn't play that much this year. And if he was that good, you expect him to go from mostly an inactive. Well, what I'm saying is from him to go mostly inactive all year to jump up and be your number three guy
next year? I don't think that'd be a huge stretch.
Oh, well, I think it would be.
To be the number three, not your primary guy.
Correct.
I don't think that'd be a huge...
So throw a number out there. 300-400 yards?
Yeah, I think you could look at him for, I don't know, what, 45 targets maybe, 40... In the 40s somewhere, he comes up with 29, 33 catches. I don't know. I'm just throwing out numbers.
If you get something like that, it'd be an improvement. I mean, Moore and Jerron Brown.
Gave you nothing.
Moore had 17 catches, Jerron Brown 16, and Disley gave you 23 in six games.
Yeah. Well, the only thing this computer in front of me is good for is hiding me from the camera on the stream, because this thing sucks. And I'm trying to get Baldwin's numbers up. But
trying to get Baldwin's numbers?
Yeah, because
they were really good.
His rookie year? Yeah, they were really good. Thank you, Jim.
Undrafted, a free agent.
700 yards, yes. He was another free agent. What was Ursula, like seventh round?
Yeah.
So, I mean, Doug Baldwin is a very special player. You don't just go haphazardly comparing people to Doug Baldwin. But here's one thing I would say about all of this.
I like that respect, by the way. You don't just haphazardly compare somebody to Doug.
Yeah.
But,
you know, I feel like... It's just a sort of unrelated topic. Well, it's related.
I'll give you his, before you carry on, his rookie
Please.
Year.
Thank you.
In 16 games, he had 51 catches on 86 targets, 788 yards, and four touchdowns.
There we go. Okay, and I remember, I think he scored his first game against San Francisco. I thought he had like a 55-yard touchdown, and it was against Harbaugh and the Niners. And, yeah, that was kind of a redemption for him because, you know, he felt like also that Harbaugh didn't necessarily sell him.
Oh, yeah, him and Sherman both had issues with that.
Yeah. So did he have – I thought he scored as a 55-yard touchdown.
Let's see, San Francisco, he was targeted six times, four catches, 55 – look at you. Look at the big brain on Dave, the big memory, 55-yard reception – touchdown.
That's my guy, man, my Stanford guy there.
What
so
that?
Yeah, I mean, I look, that's what I'm not saying that Ursua could have done that, but the one thing I would say is that do you ever hear like a ripple of any kind of a problem between Pete and John Schneider?
No. Never.
Never. Never. But you've got to be frustrated if you go out and get these guys and you want them to play. And I don't know if this is a trend or not. And obviously, I just think I think he's the best coach in the NFL. And I love everything about him. It was just very un-Pete-like, like I said, that they didn't, you know, have those guys out on the field and get a guy like Ursua out there. And yet, John and him, I mean, he's always referring to Johnny's going to go out and get this and that. And, you know, and John loves Pete, and they have a great relationship. But and maybe even so with Russell Wilson, maybe he felt like that, you know, get some of these young guys out here and let's get them out here. Because like you guys said, I mean, you're thrown to Jerron Brown, who I gave him a chance, man. He was good.
Yeah, you stood up for him last year.
Well, 2018. Yeah, they only threw him the ball 19 times, and then they come
14 catches. And
yeah, and
five touchdowns. Yeah, he was productive in the small moments that he was targeted.
But then he came back, and then he had the two touchdowns in Cleveland and then kind of fell off the face of the earth. So, yeah, why are you taking a picture of me on the stream, Bob?
I'm taking a picture of a comment.
Okay. Yeah, because my screen here, it's only good for blocking part of me.
It's anyway. Not you. It's a comment on there.
So anyway, I would like to see a little bit more of Ursua, and if we're not here to make crazy predictions.
Do you think that's a stretch that he could come into next year and be the number three receiver? I don't think that's a tall order at all.
Like I said, throw out the number for number three receiver. Was it 3-4? Because Russ had 4,000 yards.
Yeah.
You know, so what is it, 400 or 500? I don't know. I mean, something like that. Yeah, it wouldn't be, I don't think, that much of a stretch. And they've done that in the past. And I feel like, you know, Doug Baldwin maybe wouldn't have got on the field this year. Or maybe wouldn't have gotten as many catches.
No, I feel like Baldwin would have if he was on this team. I look at it.
If he was a rookie?
Yeah, well, Pete Carroll has, like you're saying, like you're laying out over there, that Pete Carroll has this reputation of playing young guys. He did it at USC, too, and the freshman.
But he didn't this year.
By the end of, no, he didn't do it this year, and so the only explanation I have for that is he just didn't think they were good enough.
Yeah, your third leading receiver was Jacob Hollister. 41 catches, 349 yards, 3 touchdowns.
Yeah, I just sit there and I go, yeah, I like Ugo Amadi. I like Marquise Blair. I'm like everybody else that's seen the hits and seen the numbers at Oregon for Amadi and Marquise Blair being a second-round pick, and you're going, okay, how come we're not seeing him? But I just go back to Pete Carroll and thinking, well, there's reasons why they're not out there. And you'd watch Jamar Taylor and you'd go, well, could he be that much better than Ugo Amadi? And then I'd go, well, apparently so. Well, because Pete has that history of playing rookies, and so if he's not playing them, he's got to have a good reason. And like you're saying, Dave, he sees him in practice.
Well, I was just going to say, maybe that's the worst thing you've ever said, because that's just become the default, right? When we don't have an answer as to why somebody's not playing, they come in with all this hype and promise, and we hear John and Pete, you know, at the draft, and they're talking to reporters about every draft pick. Oh, we love this kid. We had him graded as a fourth rounder. We had it. You know, it's always praise and potential. And then they're absent, they're anonymous, you're going, well, what's going on here? Especially when you're lacking. It'd be different if he just had all these stud receivers, and you're like, well, how's he going to get on the – it's sort of like the linebackers, right? You're like, well, realistically, what do you expect, you know, from BBK or Barton? They're just not going to get a ton with that linebacking crew there. That's not the case in these situations. And then you brought up, well, we don't see what's happening during the week, which is a very realistic – thoughtful way of looking at it. You're absolutely right, but that's become the default. Like, well, it's got to be that they're not seeing something in practice. Something is not hitting them right. They're making the same mistakes, or they're not picking it up the way that they think they should.
Especially with DBs, I think, for Pete. And look, here's the thing. I entirely trust Pete Carroll. He totally knows what he's doing. I guess what I don't like is what I think that says about that class.
No, that's true. You like to think that it's a really good class, but you start to wonder about it, especially with a guy at the top of it, L.J. Collier.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're kind of torn. It's almost like I don't want Pete to be wrong, and I don't think he is. But, you know, it's kind of a little bit discouraging. But look, maybe they're not those type of players. And, you know, I mean, look, what happened with Gary Jennings is now in Miami. I mean, that guy, he had all the numbers in college, the most complete resume, and just got cut, and now he's down there, probably on their practice squad. He's listed as questionable.
he was facing,
like, still?
He was facing huge odds, though, Dave. You don't succeed as a fourth-round draft choice if you're a wide receiver in Seattle. It's been proven over and over again.
Talk
to Chris Harper, talk to Durham, talk to Thurald Simon, who was a fourth-rounder, not a receiver.
Norwood.
That's not a good round to be a receiver and drafted by the Seahawks.
No.
But is it the number itself? Jim believes that it is.
Is it human nature?
Oh, look, now the computer went off. Yeah. Okay, that's great.
Somebody's messing with you.
Yeah, you do that.
Somebody's
keep doing that.
I think Vern's
just make
down
stuff
there.
Up over there, dude.
I think Vern's downstairs where, you know, how they can connect and do it themselves. I think he's messing with you.
You know what, Jim? It knows that it's me.
It does. If you were 25 years old, that computer would be working just fine.
I always say that in the pit. I'm like, I'm always yelling at the computer, don't act like you don't know me, okay? Where's my email address?
You guys can watch Dave's frustration on the video stream at 710sports.com.
Well,
just click,
not anymore.
Click the watch live button as he sinks down in his chair. Click the watch live button, 710sports.com. Whole new video setup, by the way. It's going to dazzle you. You got the crawl underneath with all the news going on. We got cameras in the control room, which they love. DJ can't wait to talk on the mic because the camera flashes to him. Brian loves everybody that gets back behind the glass loves it. It's amazing.
I'll bet Brian's back there watching the golf tournament at Pebble Beach. That's what I'm thinking.
I don't think he is.
No, I think he is. Nick Taylor, the former Husky, he's leading
should
the tournament
be.
Right
Not
now.
Not right now, but it should be. Yeah.
All right, well, let's take two.
Take two.
The XFL season begins tomorrow, and the Seattle Dragons will be taking on the DC Defenders tomorrow at 11 a.m. Pacific time on ABC.
Yeah, we'll talk more about this coming up in the next segment, but my excitement level has definitely increased. I was when it was first announced and the name and, hey, the season's going to start, we were in Seahawks mania. I just couldn't focus on it. I was like, not thinking about it, not worried about it. Now the potential that it fills that gap that we talked about is awesome. I'm looking forward to the game tomorrow.
My Dragons hat has not come yet. I ordered it the other night.
You got in on that quick. You ordered shirts. You were giving them out as gifts.
Schoening's with me. Brian Schoening. How many items do you have, Brian?
I just have a hat, and then my brother and my dad also have the same hat.
Yeah, see, I bought my kids T-shirts. I got a T-shirt. I got a hat. I'm really excited for it, though. I'm just hoping it's going to be, you know, like I said, the brand of football. We hope, you know, that it's good stuff. But they're dealing with the East Coast time change. 11 a.m. start.
Oh boy, are we going to get into that?
Yeah,
we'll see if it's a thing.
Well, Jim Zorn can call Pete and see how they handled it.
I know how they handled it. All the players get on the first bus.
Oh, okay.
Go over early. Don't no stragglers. Get over there early and get ready. Get warmed up.
That should be fun, though.
Jim, it's take two. Oh. We got to get to UW Washington State.
Okay. Yeah, we know you've got more material on this.
Okay.
Go ahead, DJ.
The Apple Cup of basketball.
Yes, UW and Wazoo will take each other on in the basketball version of the Apple Cup on Sunday. Tip-off is at 3 p.m. on ESPNU.
Jim, thoughts?
I'm nervous about the game. I am. I'm nervous. I know we're at home. We play a lot better at home, but I just think the Huskies at some point, I mean, that's a team that beat USC by 32 points. They beat Baylor. I just wonder when that Husky team's going to show up, and I have a feeling.
Have you watched this team lately?
Yeah, I have a feeling they're going to show up on Sunday.
They're not.
Is this
they're,
residual?
They're going to show up after the game.
Is this residual effect from years of Apple Cups and football?
No, it's just residual effect of watching and seeing how much talent they have, and thinking the world of Mike Hopkins, and thinking they're going to turn it around. But I have every bit of faith too that C.J. Ellaby and Isaac Bonton and Jeff Pollard and company are going to get the job done. Noah Williams has been good, too.
All that love you gave him yesterday, and now you're predicting a Husky win?
Not predicting a Husky win.
You slobbered all over the poor kid. Now you're thinking,
I did, didn't I? That was really unprofessional.
Yeah, it was uncomfortable.
I just love the Cougs that much, though.
Isn't it funny that, Dave, you and I have got more faith in the Cougar team than Jim does?
Yeah. He's shell-shocked.
Yeah, we'll see.
Is this a protection mechanism? You're just like, well, there's a chance they could lose, so I want to be out front.
They have more talent than we have.
If you're going to Vegas and you bet on this game, who are you betting on? What's the spread?
Well, I'm not
going to
bet on Washington.
No. If you're betting with your head,
Jim,
not your heart.
Do you like money?
I do like money. It doesn't seem like it.
Sounds like you don't like it.
It doesn't seem like it, but no, I wouldn't bet on the Huskies, no way.
People are telling Dave just to punch the computer. That helps. Or here's some good advice. Dave, have you tried to restart? Turn the computer off, then back on.
I don't even know where the damn thing turns on. All I got is a screen. There's a bunch of wires going God knows where underneath this big table here. Yeah, it's
Brenna will help you out, though. Send her an email. She helped me out.
We'll get somebody to check it out during the break here. All right, coming up, what's the biggest obstacle that the XFL could face? We're going to get into this coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and More on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
You know what this is, Jim?
There is no fuel like conversation.
No.
There you go. That button still confuses you, doesn't
it? Yeah, occasionally.
It's Walking Papers.
Walking Papers.
That's the great Duff McKagan playing bass on that. It was his birthday yesterday. So happy birthday to Duff McKagan of Guns N' Roses. Meanwhile, coming up at 4 o'clock today, the Professor John Clayton will join us on the program. We've been talking about it. The XFL kicks things off tomorrow morning. The Seattle Dragons in D.C. to take on the Defenders, right?
Yes.
It's going to take a while to get used to all these names.
D.C. Defenders.
But I was talking with DJ before the show about this, and you know, what do we need to see from the XFL? What do they need to do to sustain themselves? Because we saw the first incarnation, which was a joke, right? It was all show. It was all goofy. It was all WWE. It was dumb.
Well, it's going to help having a team in Seattle, not just for us locally, but I think Seattle has a chance to be one of the best teams. Not maybe on the field, but as far as drawing a crowd.
Well, I think they lead the league in ticket sales.
Might be like what the Sounders are to the MLS.
I think you've nailed it. I think it's going to be like the Sounders, where if you're somebody that watches the MLS on TV and you see some of these other stadiums, you're like, where is everybody? Because you're used to looking at CenturyLink, and Sounders fans are maniacs. That place is packed all the time, and there's a different appetite for it. I feel like that's what we're going to see with the XFL, that in some of the major cities, maybe in some of the smaller cities it'll take off, but in terms of major cities like New York or wherever, might be a tougher sell. Maybe there won't be the passion. There won't be the fire for
it. Even here?
No, here I think there will be. They've already proven it with the ticket sales. So I'm curious to see how it does in the other cities. That's why I was comparing it to the Sounders. But I think in order to sustain itself, it's got to be legit football. And I know that's stating the obvious, but it's got to be a good product because, A, you don't have superstars to build this league on. There's nobody in this league that people are going, man, I can't wait to see.
Cardale Jones?
Yeah. Landry Jones.
Quarterback for the Defenders that the Dragons are taking on tomorrow.
Yeah, a guy who, by the way, did you know he was on the Seahawks squad for a bit? I remember walking in there during preseason games, and he's in the locker room. I'm like, I didn't know Cardale Jones was on the roster.
I wasn't aware of that.
Did you think it's probably because you thought he was a defensive end?
He's a big kid.
He's huge.
But yeah, I didn't even know it. But there is no face of the league. There's nobody to market. I saw a story yesterday on ESPN where it said Landry Jones, the face of the XFL. I'm
like, oh, really?
Landry Jones. Huh. So they don't have star power. They don't have that. Got to tune in and watch this guy. They've got to develop it, and it's got to be a legit product. There's no gimmick, and luckily they haven't gone that way. Now, some of the rules maybe people will feel like is gimmicky, whether it's after the touchdown, 3-point, 2-point, 1-point. But their product is what's going to sustain this because you don't have the stars.
No, you're right about it being sustained by the product, but I still think early on people are going to be interested to see what this new league is all about. Now, AAF didn't work out last year, but I think these rules are going to be fun. We were talking earlier today about it. They've got the running clock except for when it comes to the two-minute warning, and so there's going to be things happening, a 25-second play clock, and so you look at the games might last 2 hours. I don't think they're going to go over 2.5.
Why do we need that, though? There's a couple of things here that I'm really excited for this league. By the way, Kristen Michael, aren't you excited to see him?
Is he in the league?
St. Louis.
Is he?
What's the St. Louis team, DJ?
DJ's not listening to the show. I was drinking water.
DJ, I wouldn't listen to the show either.
Oh, hey, ho.
Oh, okay, stop it.
Yeah, pace is a big thing. For all their rules seem to center around pace.
But do you ever sit there and watching a football game and go, man, never. This game is too long?
Never. That's a baseball complaint. That's in my experience. I don't recall being with anybody or talking to somebody who said, yeah, I love football, but man, the games just take too long. I've never heard that.
How many delay of game penalties would the Seahawks get in the XFL?
What's that?
Delay of game penalties for the Seahawks if they were an XFL team.
The way they approach the play clock.
Well, we're going to get into that later, but
yeah.
There was a lot. So, it's to me, I don't ever complain about – I don't complain about a baseball game being long either because it usually means that there are extra innings. And that's when it really gets exciting.
But that I get. That I understand that if you weren't brought up with baseball, you didn't play, you weren't really a fan, and you kind of get into it, I get how you could watch it and go, yeah, it's just – it's slow, it takes too long. I totally understand it. I love baseball. I don't have a problem with it, but it makes sense.
Either.
But with football, I've never heard a single person say, man, these games are just an eternity.
Well, I just love that I can come home and turn on the Mariner game and go upstairs and tell my wife, honey, I'm going to work right now. And when it
goes later. You got your bowl of M&Ms. You got your notepad.
That's right. I did have M&Ms that time. But there's a couple things. Yeah, to me, that's not a selling point. The shorter halftime. 10 minutes. I mean, doesn't everybody like to go and get a beer or barbecue something at halftime? I mean, that to me is it's not giving me anything more.
Is that the millennials that can't focus for as long? Is that the stereotype that millennials can't stay focused? So
this could be.
They're trying to direct this at the younger crowd that can't focus for 3 hours, so let's shorten it.
The other thing is the multiple forward passes. How's that going to work? If you're lined up in a shotgun and it's a 5 yard, say 5 yards back, you're going to throw it behind the line of scrimmage forward. And if a receiver is, 15, 20 yards away, he's going to catch it behind the line of scrimmage, and then he can still throw it maybe. But doesn't he get tackled by the time the ball gets? I don't get – that, to me, I can't envision how that is going to play out.
Uh,
Like the one foot and bounce, as mentioned earlier. But, yeah, shorter halftime, that doesn't blow my skirt up at all. And also, I don't like the word safer.
Yeah.
Safer kickoff returns.
That turns Dave off.
Well, the two teams are going to be lined up 5 yards apart. Okay, fine. We'll see what happens there. So, but, yeah, the two-point, three-point, one-point conversion thing is really cool. I like that, and I like that they have a dedicated ball-spotting official. That's just something that I've decided to get annoyed about this year.
Yeah.
The ball spotting has bothered me because I just think we came down to this, 2 inches to win the NFC West championship. And you see officials all the time just kind of, I'll just put it here.
Yeah. Seems so arbitrary.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's some good things here, but I'm hoping for these young guys that, it's a good opportunity.
Well, and Greg McElroy, you know him?
Yeah. The former Alabama quarterback.
Is he the guy with the
color
pretty
analyst
girlfriend?
For the XFL? The Cincinnati backup, A.J. McCarron.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The Brent Musburger made an appropriate comment about it.
Yeah.
So funny. Well, McElroy was talking about this, talked about the XFL being great for players who would have normally sat on a practice squad somewhere. All right. Did Stacy mute this thing again? For the love of God.
Stacy causes all kinds of problems in here.
These computers, I'm telling you what, they get muted. I don't know. Is it good now? All right. Let's give it another whirl and see what happens here. No.
I heard it. I can tell you what he said.
What did he say?
The more I've learned about it,
here we go.
And the more I've really kind of dove into the rosters and the philosophies behind the actual league itself, I couldn't be more supportive. And frankly, as a guy that's really not that far removed from playing in the NFL, I mean, I'm only 6 years out, this is a league I would have played in a heartbeat. And I think that's what kind of drew me to it, is seeing the development and the fact that guys are getting actual playing reps as opposed to sitting on practice squads is something that's very, very exciting to me.
Another one from him just talking about XFL teams with the most buzz have quarterbacks that have NFL experience.
Of course, it's going to be a quarterback-driven league, so teams with the best quarterbacks are the ones that are probably going to get the most attention before the season, that being Washington, D.C., with Cardale Jones, Dallas with Landry Jones, two guys that had NFL careers. Those two teams will probably get the most attention. And then Tampa Bay with Aaron Murray, who was also an NFL quarterback for a little bit as well. Those have been the teams that have kind of generated the most buzz. But for the most part, I mean, it's anybody's guess. There's a lot of guys that just haven't had opportunities that are going to be getting their first opportunity in the XFL to kind of showcase what they can do.
And then last one, just a thought on the Seattle Dragons quarterback, Brandon Silvers.
You know, I think the thing about Seattle is that nobody really knows what to make of their quarterback. I mean, no one really knows who Brandon Silvers is, except for those that followed college football very closely. And those that followed college football very closely and watched Troy, and I live in the Birmingham, Alabama area, I'm very familiar with Troy. And he's a guy that I've been paying a lot of attention to for quite some time. I think he's a really talented guy.
Why is he talking about Troy Aikman?
Yeah, I don't know. He's a big fan. Big fan. Yeah, I don't know anything about Brandon Silvers. Do you, Jim? You're a college football honk.
I don't know a lot about him, but he played with the Memphis Express in that AAF league. So we'll see. But
why isn't Greg McElroy playing? He's only 31. He should come out of the booth.
Said 6 years. Maybe that's too long.
Too long for him. Yeah, and I wonder about like injuries and things like that too. Because I was talking to Zorn about this. He's like, "Yeah, guys, show up, start running around. You know, you're going to see pulled hamstrings, things like that." But again, I'm rooting for him, man. I'm fun. I'm going to have fun. I'm going to be there, taking my son to the first home game.
Yeah, next weekend.
Yep,
next weekend. So it kicks off this weekend on the road. First home game the following weekend. Everybody's looking forward to that. Meanwhile, what should the Seahawks do with their current running back situation? And they do have a situation. We're going to get into it next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Coming up at the top of the hour, the professor, John Clayton, will join us on the program. Meanwhile, looking at the running back position, how comfortable are you with it heading into the new season? What are you grinning at?
Oh, I was just grinning. That was saved me from Skillet. I was going to ask you. You're always asking me who's playing there on the bumper. But I'm kind of comfortable with the running back situation, but not totally set. The Penny injury worries me the most, especially when Pete Carroll expresses concern, because usually he's upbeat about a guy. Oh, yeah, he's going to come back. He'll be fine by training camp. We don't hear that about Penny with his injury. Chris Carson, we do, though, because he has a hip injury that won't require surgery. So you feel good about him coming back?
Well, hang on. Let me stop you there for a minute. How come you feel good about him? And we've talked about Disley. We've talked about a guy who we love. You feel good about what he can do because we've seen how good he can be. But why should we have faith that he's going to become more durable, that he's not going to be? He's been hurt every year. You look at him, he dropped 4 games in 17 to injury, 14 games in 2018. His season was ended last year. He's proven to be injury prone. Now, whether it's freak injuries and it's, you know, we're being unfair, but to this point, he's in the same camp, in my opinion, as Disley, in that when he's on the field, you love him. He's incredible. There's no doubt about who he is on the field and what he can do. It's about his availability, and can you count on him, and is it a concern moving forward?
Yeah, I'm sorry, you're talking about Carson, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's one of the more special running backs in the league, but now you've got to start to think about that. Wait, you said he missed how many in 2018?
Let's see, 4 games in 17, 14, and 18.
I don't think he missed 14 games.
Sorry, that meant he played in 14.
Played in 14, excuse me. He's yet to play a full season.
Right. He missed the Arizona game, and he was actually absent in the Chicago game. That was when
they said he was tired.
That was the weird one.
That was Pete. Their messaging didn't connect with each other after that, because his excuse for it was convoluted. And Chris, remember Carson kind of came out and said, no, I wasn't tired. I felt fine. And
yeah.
That was weird.
Yeah, but I think he just gets better every year. He has more moves. He's running over people. He's jumping over them. I mean, it's, you know, and then he has those. And to me, like, what really, if you took one picture of what the 2019 season looked like, it was him stretching for the end zone in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And he didn't end up getting the touchdown there, but just the maximum effort that you see from him, and he's not scared of anybody, and he's going to run people over. I think he's getting better at, you know, trying to avoid contact, you know, unnecessary contact anyway. Remember, we talked to him and he had that discussion with us. He's like, yeah, you know, I probably should step out of bounds every once in a while.
Yeah, instead of that extra half yard.
But I love that his instinct is to run people over, because Pete has said this in the past that, you know, he doesn't want just a running game. We want a punishing running game. And that's what Marshawn Lynch is. You wear the defenders down. And I've said this many times, that somebody passes down the field 3-4 times on your defense, scores a touchdown, it's not even close to being as demoralizing as a 10-play drive with a guy like Carson, you know, and that's what Kansas City used to, do.
But do you worry about his durability? I mean, again, I don't think there's any question. I don't think, as far as I know, nobody questions who he is when he's on the field. You love him. Fumbling is an issue. I'd like to see that cleaned up. Certainly, at 6 this year, but it's not about his talent. It's just about how available can he be, and is this going to be sort of what we prepare for every year, that, hey, he's not going to be available for all 16, because that's what his career numbers tell you so far. He hasn't played 16 in any of his first 3 years. So,
well, I just think you always have to have a stable of running backs. And what was I missed the Pete comments about Rashad Penny coming back.
Well, they were. It wasn't like he was negative, but it wasn't like he was his usual optimistic self, too, because he said that there was more to the knee injury than met the eye, basically. Okay. So I don't know if Penny's even going to be ready for training camp, and if he does come back, it looks a little problematic for him. So,
and pro size,
which
you
is too bad, because
back.
We saw what they were. They finally got what they were looking for, the 1-2 punch with Penny last year, mm-hmm. and then had the injury to both of them.
Yeah, and then ProSize, you assume, is not back. You got Homer, who we like, but you look at the way he runs and his size, it would not be shocking if that guy had suffered injuries. I mean, he looks like he's ready to run right through a wall every time. He's listed at 200 pounds. I mean, or 202 pounds, whatever it is to be exact, but I don't know. Is he going to be a durable guy? Is he even a guy you could look to carry the load? It doesn't feel that way, as much as I like him, and I think he's part of your rotation. I think the rotation needs to be addressed.
Well, one thing I like about the situation with Carson coming back, he's in the final year of a contract, so his first contract. So you would expect him to be in a contract year like that, maybe have a little extra incentive. Dave, I'm going to throw human nature into that. Where if you're Chris Carson, you're thinking, man, I'm on the verge of a big payday here, whether it's in Seattle or somewhere else. They just have a big year.
Well, but to me, that's not the question. His ability, he's had big years. I mean, he had 1,200 yards last year, 7 touchdowns, averaged 4.5 yards a carry. Pretty nice year for him. So I don't doubt that he could go out. It's just about his durability, not his want to, his desire, his work ethic. All of that, to me, is unquestioned. Just can you count on him being there?
Yeah, I'm going to count on him being there. And even when he had the fumbles, I just think that Chris Carson is just such a level up there above what else the other guys you have. Rashad Penny closed the gap a little bit toward the end of the season before he got hurt. But there's some interesting running backs in the free agent market, too, that I was looking at that maybe the Seahawks will look at, too, with Carlos Hyde, Kenyon Drake, and Melvin Gordon. Kenyon Drake is a guy that I would like to see here, but Clayton was saying yesterday that he thinks he'd be a little expensive as an option for Seattle.
Yeah, Hyde's 29 years old. Gordon's 26 years old. Came back after holding out. Didn't have anywhere near what everybody thought he was going to be or what he thought he was going to be. So maybe that's good. Maybe his price tag comes down. But, yeah, looking at a veteran to sort of his insurance, I don't think would be a terrible idea by any stretch.
No, or, you know, even drafting a guy. And I heard Danny and Gallant having this argument about, you know, whether a first-round talent is good, you know, a third, fourth, fifth-round talent. I mean, look where you got Carson. Fifth, was it, or seventh?
Carson was a seventh-rounder.
Seventh-rounder. I mean, he's spectacular. He really is. And I'm not just saying it because he's our running back. But, man, if he is able to stay healthy, I mean, he's putting up great numbers. And, yeah, it was a shame when he got hurt in 17. But, you know, and then with Penny coming back from this injury, we'll see if he's, you know, reached that level of professionalism where, you know, it's really a grind to get back.
All right, coming up, we'll talk some more football with the professor, John Clayton, see if he's got some names out there that would be appealing to the Seahawks as far as receivers and running backs go. All of that coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.